Welcome to The Awakened Homeowner. Thinking about a new home or remodel, but feeling lost in a maze of decisions? You're in the right place. I'm William Reed, and for over three decades, I've coordinated the design and construction of hundreds of remodel and new home projects. I know the process can feel overwhelming, but trust me, you can do this. Here, we break it all down step by step so you can feel confident, empowered, and even excited about your project. No stress, no guesswork, just the guidance you need to bring your dream home to life. Let's dive in. All right, welcome back. Here we are again in the studio, and we're in the design process series. And if you haven't listened, I had an episode 22 where I introduced this whole design process methodology that most people like architecture firms deploy on a project. And then I dove into the very first step, which was called schematic design. And that's like the early stage, organic, creative, free-flowing process where you can just have fun with all your ideas with your designer. We're gonna get progressively more and more comprehensive and detailed in this design process so that you as a homeowner understand what goes on behind the scenes, what are some of the things that you need to be prepared for to provide your design team, and just really to get your head right so that you understand where we're at. At this stage of the game, we've already created this concept, or concepts, I should say, different ideas within design work. Visualize your architect has presented to you multiple versions of your floor plans or your architectural style and different home styles and shapes and configurations, and maybe even different ways on your lot. And it's come to the time where you need to make decisions and on which direction to go. And I'd recommend you go back and listen to that episode or read this part in the book of the schematic design step in the World of Design section of the book or the podcast. And you can understand that you've been empowered by exploring these ideas, and you've even done some budget checkpoints in one way or another to make sure that you're on track before you take the bigger plunge, before you start writing checks to your architect for more money. You've already paid for the schematic design stage in one way or another. Now they're gonna be asking you, okay, are you serious? Do you really wanna do this? Do you wanna dive in? Great, send me a check and let's start making some decisions. So this three episode journey for design development is gonna go like this. We're gonna first talk about today in episode 24 of the podcast, what we call the commitment phase. And we'll expand from that, but I really want you to understand that we've taken this free-flowing organic process and we've now getting into more regimented, stricter steps that are taken, because there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that most homeowners don't realize that takes coordination, time, and money to develop all of the plans and details that are needed so that you can build this project efficiently. So the commitment phase, we'll understand what design development means and why it's different from everything before that we talked about. We'll talk about the six objectives that guide this phase and how to make strategic decisions at crucial checkpoints. So that's the episode today. And we're gonna get into a little bit more detail than that, hopefully, if I have time. The episode after that, still in this design development, stepping stone two of the design process is assembling your dream team, we'll call it. And that's where we'll dive into how structural engineers, mechanical, electrical, plumbing consultants, and interior designers integrate their expertise as part of the design team, and how professional coordination actually works, and how your plans evolve from pretty pictures into detailed construction documents. This could be the foundation of those horror stories that you hear about from your friends and colleagues and neighbors. Poor planning, poor design, inadequate design is like this underbrush of horror stories. And you have to keep in mind that every time I'm talking with you, I'm thinking way ahead of how to avoid all of that so that you can then implement your plan, not design on the fly. Be picking out countertop materials the day before the guy's supposed to arrive to measure. There's just a million things that can happen that you're not aware of, that I am aware of, and I'm trying to get that out of here, my head, and into you. So episode 26 is a really big one. It's called Specification Mastery. And this is where we'll master the three-component specification system that protects your investment. And we'll learn strategic material and equipment selection and prepare for another budget checkpoint, number two, and maybe even some actual real cost estimating that is one of the biggest goals of the end of stepping stone number two, design development, is you to be armed with a complete set of plans and specifications to be able to get real hard cost estimates. The folks that spend the time and money up front to specify as much as possible ahead of time, not just the paint colors and the cabinet styles, but I'm talking about the entire scope of the work of the project for all of the trades involved, are the people that don't have those change order hell and the scope creep, at least not nearly as much. And if they do, it's not significant enough to alert the media. This is the most substantial part of the design process. This is probably where 60 to 70% of your design work actually happens and is the most important. You'll be involved in a lot of this, but your team will also be involved behind the scenes. So when you get these proposals from your architect that says stage two design development, you're probably going to see that to be a larger amount than all the other steps. And you're not going to be able to see everything that's happening behind the scenes because you're going to learn why today. There's a lot that goes on. This is where your team expands from maybe just one person or two people that you've been talking with to potentially 6 to 8 or maybe even more design professionals that specialize in certain aspects. If you go back to some of my previous episodes, we talked about civil engineers and soils engineers and structural engineers. These are all people that may get involved in your project, and somebody's got to run that ship, and that's usually your architect. Or if you're an owner builder, you're doing it yourself and you're going to need a lot more help than I'll be able to get you started on that. But you're probably going to need more help if you're trying to tackle it on your own. You've never done it before. This is where your plans go from conceptual to construction ready and where you'll make thousands of decisions that determine your project success. And your design professionals, your design team, it's their job to prompt you on all of these decisions that they need. But it's also good for you to know some of these too. I want you to understand something critical. Once you cross this bridge from schematic design to design development, or you hop onto the next stepping stone, now you're in the middle of the stream and the stone behind you, schematic design, is kind of gone. Because during that step of schematic design, you've vetted out all your ideas, and then either at the end of schematic design or at the very beginning of design development, before you take that leap, in the middle of that leap, you are making decisions. You want plan B. You want an option for the basement. You want to consider a pool and a cabana out there, but maybe as an option. You're giving your architect direction. I do like the architectural style in plan C, but I like the floor plan in plan B. This happens all the time, and that's okay, because that's the whole objective. Your architect will then merge all of this together into one cohesive plan, strategic plan, to go into design development. So the idea here is you're not in the middle of design development going, I really think I want to go back to that farmhouse style. I think this design is too modern. So this is not something you would want to do. Now, not to say you can't do that. It's possible, but you're going to get a little bit of blowback on that. And your architect's going to have to pause and then back up and redo things, which is going to cost you money. So you really want to feel comfortable at this stage of the game before you move into design development. You know, you're in the zone of detailed development where changes become expensive and timelines get crushed if you're not really ready to move into this next step. So if you master this process with the knowledge I'm going to give you, this is where the construction is a lot more smooth sailing, okay? This is where you can then sit back and watch your team, your construction team, go to work. This is also how you protect the morale, the focus, and the motivation of your design and your construction team. If they have the information they need to build this project in the field, they're going to love you. They're going to take care of you. But if you're constantly peppering everybody with changes and revisions, they're going to just not care as much. They'll still do the job, but they're just not going to be as motivated. And they're going to charge you for every single little thing that happens. So remember, this is about relationship building and maintaining during the construction and the design of the project. And that might help you save some money and enjoy the process, because you might only do this once in your lifetime. This is me thinking way ahead to make your experience as best as possible. So let's talk about segment one, the great transition from dreaming to developing. So let's just talk about what just happened in your design process. You went through that schematic level, you wanted the kitchen on the front and the back, and you've made these final decisions. But design development, okay, it's, think of it like taking your Play-Doh that you've been kneading around and moving and mixing up and whatever. Now you're putting it into the bronze cast, right? And you can still make some adjustments while that metal's warm, but it's cooling fast. And once that starts, you're committed. You're committed to the project. You're committed to the design options that you've taken, that you've selected. And trying to make changes is pretty hard. You'll have to get the jackhammer out and start chipping away at your bronze statue. So this commitment, it can kind of mess with your head a little bit, right? For weeks or months, you've been exploring all these options, having fun, seeing all these renderings on the screen and trying to pick things out and give direction. You've been dreaming about all these possibilities, but now it's time to commit. And you might panic a little bit there, and that's okay. One of the reasons you might be panicking is because you're not feeling comfortable. You're not feeling 100% committed to the project as a whole, or you're not 100% committed to the actual style of the home or design configurations or other things that could come at you that are making you feel uncomfortable, and then therefore anxiety and panic sets in. So this is where you want to pause. You want to start thinking about it. The smart homeowners have done everything that I've told them to do, and they just feel like this is a natural progression of a good design process and project planning. So triggering design development doesn't just automatically begin. It's triggered by you making conscious decisions to select your desired design concepts and options from your schematic phase process. You're essentially saying to your architect, this is it. This is what we want to build. Now help us figure out exactly how to make it happen. Visualize yourself saying that, and you'll get there. You may have to require some iterations on the schematic level design. You may need to bring in an interior designer even at that stage, and we're going to talk about that, so that you feel better and good about the direction that we're going. When you move into design development, it's not necessarily that you can't make any changes. If you wanted to make the master bathroom a foot wider, or if you wanted to make your new primary bedroom suite addition maybe 2 feet deeper, or minor changes like that's not even, that's even a questionable one after you've gone through schematic design. What you don't want to hear yourself saying is, I really think I want the kitchen on the other end of the house. I think I want to go with 12-foot ceilings instead of 10-foot ceilings. You see where I'm going? We don't want to be there, because that means he or she, your architect, goes back and starts making all these revisions and basically redesigning the schematic plan. So that is not what you want to happen. So I think I drove that point home. So feel good before you move into the next step. Let's talk about the next segment. This is the six objectives of your design development roadmap. Design development has six specific objectives, is how I frame this for you today. And think of these as your mission checklist, right? Each one builds on the previous one. And you can't successfully move to construction without completing all six. So we're gonna break them down as best I can by you just listening to this, and hopefully gets you in a much better spot than where you were before you listened to this episode. So objective one is tailor the selected designs and solutions. So perfect your chosen concept rather than exploring new ones, which is what I've talked about already. Refine proportions, adjust details, optimize functionality. So what you're doing is you're now going into this schematic plan that you've picked out for your new kitchen or your brand new estate. It doesn't matter. And you're working with the architect to go, okay, this is what we've chosen. Now let's just go through it. Let's go through it room by room. Walk me through from the ground up, the foundation, the floor, the walls, the sizes of the rooms, the ceiling heights, the second floor, the views, everything that we can think of that you care about. Just think about the things that you care about. You don't need to know how to be an architect or anything about construction, but what you care about, what you've been thinking about for years, maybe even a decade, that you want to make sure is in this plan. And then you're going to refine these proportions of the rooms, of the scale. We're going to get into some of these details in future episodes, but for example, you may be looking at the 3D rendering of the house that the architect has done through their software. Or maybe it's a front elevation, which is a 2D drawing of your home. And you're looking at all, just you're sitting back and you're looking at all of the windows and doors and roof lines and proportions. And you're just seeing if there's anything that looks funny to you, right? You don't have to be a designer, an architect, or a contractor, a builder necessarily to see something that's not, doesn't look right. And at the very least, you can say, I'm not sure, but let me ask some questions. That is the proportions, the details, and then the functionality is a big one too, where you're gonna wanna make sure that this home is working for you on where fixtures and doors and windows and rooms and everything are. Because we're talking about getting into the design development. We're not deep into the design development. You've picked a floor plan, you've picked the concepts. Now you just want to make damn sure that it is really what you want. Because moving a wall on a computer screen is a lot easier than moving it in the field during construction. And you're really making sure this project, these buildings work for your property and your lifestyle, right? You got to be thinking about pulling in and out of your home, where you're dropping the groceries off, that kind of stuff. The views, I can't emphasize enough the views if you have those options. Even if it's you're a city lot, you want to look at your neighbor or whatever. So objective one, tailor the selected design and solutions before your architect goes deep. Because once he goes deep, he's not excited about pulling back out and adding 500 more square feet to the building. You can do it. You're going to pay for it. Objective two, select construction and finish materials. So every surface, every system gets specified in design development. It can be overwhelming. It can be very overwhelming for a homeowner. From the foundation materials, which you may not get as involved in, all the way to the cabinet hardware and everything in between. So you're going to be creating a comprehensive material palette for your entire project. Now, hopefully you're not creating that. Hopefully you've hired some people to help you create that. You've done your inspirations. You've have your links in your Pinterest and your house idea books or whatever you have done. And you've conveyed this to your design professionals so that they can work with you on each of the categories and materials. But just to help you a little bit, I want you to think about two things. There's construction materials and there's finish materials. Okay, think about the construction materials. Is everything that's attached to the outside of the home, your windows, your doors, your siding, your trim, all of that is what I call construction materials that you care about. There's other things like studs and framing, but that's not what we're talking about right now. And then on the inside, visualize yourself walking into a blank home with just drywall, nothing else is stuck to the walls. Think about the finished materials, everything's stuck to the walls or floors or ceilings. That could be flooring, baseboards, interior door style, casings, cabinetry, countertops, backsplashes, tile, light fixtures, plumbing fixtures. These are all the decorative things that you see while you're living in your home that you really care about. So that's the best way for a homeowner. Everything that's stuck into the walls, attached to the walls during construction, the roofing, the gutters, the siding, the windows, the doors, all that trim, this masonry stonework on the outside, those I call those construction materials, okay? And then you walk into your home, interiors are from drywall, everything that's stuck to the floor, stuck to the drywall, stuck to the ceilings. Hopefully that helps you. So objective two is selecting construction and finish materials. Objective three, visualize with your material choices. Now, this is one that you may not always get offered to you from your architects, but I encourage you to request that after you've gone through this material selection process with your architect and your interior designer, that you request that, hey, can I look at the home in my renderings with the materials I picked or really close to the materials I picked? So for example, you may have picked a particular stone for the outside of the home. Your architect may have suggested a particular siding, the colors, the style of the front door. And on the interior, your interior designer and you have selected a particular cabinet and countertop and tile backsplash, and maybe even some lighting fixtures. Each one of those design disciplines, architectural interior, are fully qualified ones, are fully capable of importing some of those textures and colors into their software so that you can see what it's really going to look like. That could be the flooring material, the baseboards, the wall colors. If you get my drift here, this is going to help you make decisions, going back to the priority of the 3D rendering. This will also eliminate a lot of problems during construction where you had no idea that stone was going to look like that, or that subway tile backsplash, maybe it should have been vertical instead of horizontal because you have a more modern design. Just using these really random examples. This is the idea here of objective three, visualize your material choices so that you're not in a nightmare as things are getting installed and you're just blown away by what they really look like in real life. Objective four, finalize materials, equipment, and scope of work specifications. So this is one thing I want you to understand is that what we're driving towards, of course we're driving towards completing the design and getting a permit and building your project, but one of the things in design development that we're driving towards is getting an accurate budget checkpoint number two. So checkpoint number one we talked about in the previous episode, budget checkpoint number two, or actual construction estimating is ultimately where we're going with this. Now, depending on the project complexity and variables, such as if you haven't really made final decisions on the options, you can decide to do a budget checkpoint number two or do a full-blown construction estimating. But this is what we're driving at. You're finalizing the materials. You are specifying the equipment. What I mean by equipment is that could be your HVAC equipment, your plumbing equipment, your appliances, your fixtures crossover in between materials and equipment. But there's a lot of equipment that goes into a home's systems that need to be specified. You don't necessarily get as involved in that as your architect and your plumbing and mechanical and electrical designers, unless they're all the architect. Ultimately, somebody's got to write it down, right? What the heck to price out, and that it's going to work. So the materials are your construction and finished materials, your equipment are the systems of your home primarily, and then the scope of work. So a scope of work, think about a narrative that's written by somebody, could be you, it could be the architect, it could be a consultant, where you are writing down what you want. Provide and install hardwood flooring throughout the entire first floor and stairs, carpet upstairs, provide and install the subway tile in a vertical pattern with grout number 68953, with material, dowel tile 78259. You're giving narrative instruction of what to include on the project. And the reason I'm doing this and I'm saying this is because not all this information can really get on the plans. It can, but it becomes a really big muddy mess. On the plan set, an architect sometimes will create specification books for big projects or even little projects, where you create a document by construction category. And one of these days I'm going to show you how I organize that. And you will go through plumbing, electrical, mechanical, insulation, drywall, cabinetry, countertops, floor, and you will have narrative on what you as a homeowner want. This is really helpful with remodel projects because remodels get a little fuzzy sometimes. Am I doing the flooring in the old house and the new house? Am I putting a new roof on the old house and the new addition? Am I putting a whole new AC system in? What am I doing as a contractor, a builder? What am I supposed to include in the price? And if you don't do this, you're going to get one bid including it, one bid not including it. So the scope of work. So think about it as the three components, and we're going to have the last episode of the design process. I'm going to talk in detail about this, but we've got the materials, we've got the equipment, and we've got the scope of work specifications, okay? This eliminates assumptions and guesswork from the construction process, and this creates a set of specifications to get accurate and thorough pricing and for a contractor to actually look at, read, and build off of. So that is objective number four. All right, objective number five, assemble the rest of your design team. So during the design development process, now that everybody knows what we're supposed to be doing with the design, we have a sense of the materials and specifications that we want, the architect, and sometimes this will cross over into some of the previous steps I just mentioned, they will bring in the rest of the design team. They will build their team. This is an example of one of the things architect does behind the scenes is they build a design team. People like the structural engineers, the MEP consultants, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and other specialists become part of the team and contribute to the plans and specifications and scope of work. So this is where you can see it crosses over in what I just spoke about earlier, and ultimately you'll result in an accurate and thorough set of plans, specifications, scope of work. So bringing in this design team, and it depends on the project. It could be one more person, it could be eight more people, okay? And I've talked about the primary ones in the previous episode. So you can go back and listen to the primary ones and relate it to your project. If you're doing a kitchen remodel, you don't need a civil engineer. If you're doing a new custom home, you need a civil engineer on a hillside lot. You need a soils engineer. So you need all these people, right? And some of these people in new construction projects have already been involved, such as the land surveyor. But there's other people, and a good example is the structural engineer. That's probably one of the most important ones that has to come in. That could be for a remodel renovation project, or it could be for a huge estate. You almost always need a structural engineer if you're opening up walls and putting new windows in where they don't exist. Objective six, budget checkpoint and official estimating. Big one, we're gonna talk about this in more detail. In step one, schematic design, we did a very kind of high level budget checkpoint with hopefully a contractor or builder that you've employed to come help you with the project, right? Just to get another gut feeling, frankly, that has a lot more experience than you or even your architect. Now what we're doing is we have a lot more data for your contractor. Hopefully it's the same person you spoke with months ago at the end of stepping stone one, schematic design. You bring them back in. It's okay, look, now we have got a lot more details for you. We know exactly what we're doing, the materials that we want. We have a few things that we're still trying to figure out, but now would you be willing to do an estimate or review your budget from the previous time? And let's revise that if we can to make sure I'm on the right track. Now at the end of design development, let me be clear. This means that you have all of your consultants' works done. You have the structural engineering done. You have all of the materials picked out, all the equipment picked out. You are deep into the design process, and now you are feeling Good. You're seeing literal physical rolls of plans being developed for your project. Now you have the data in order to get an official construction estimate. Before we're talking about budgets and before we're talking about investment goals, now we're talking about the real deal. And we're talking about construction estimates based off of your plans and the options and the variables that you want to be able to analyze. So at the end of design development, that is what we're shooting for. When all six objectives are complete, you'll have that comprehensive set of plans and specifications that allow you to visualize your new home and engage with contractors for accurate estimates and begin the approval process even with the city early on and start talking to your HOAs, homeowners associations, if you have one. This is the project's foundation for everything that follows. So you can see we're really digging in here with the design process.
All right, quick reminder, everybody. Everything we're talking about today and so much more is in the Awaken Homeowner book. At less than 0.1% of your project cost, it's the best investment you'll make. Grab your copy on Amazon and keep it by your side throughout your entire project. Trust me, you'll refer to it again and again.
It's amazing how many people don't do this, and this is why you get delays, budgets blown, you get upset homeowners, upset contractors, upset architects, because the time wasn't spent and you as a homeowner didn't know you needed to spend that time to actually develop a complete set of plans and specifications. I'm trying to eliminate that problem for you. We're going to dive into segment three, which is I want to talk just a little bit about your architect's evolution so that you understand what's really happening. There's a hell of a lot more that goes on behind the scenes than the hour meeting you had with your architect spinning you around on fancy 3D software. There was a whole team of people for days and weeks developing that plan. So an architect is not just a designer. They have a system, they have teams, they have people that they either employ or work with to manage the entire project all the way through to breaking ground, and sometimes even during construction. So most homeowners think architects just draw pretty pictures and make spaces look nice. And they do that. That's a big thing that we want. But that's true during the schematic design process. But in design development, your architect transforms into something, you know, much more valuable for you. We'll call them the project conductor. And they're no longer just designing, they're orchestrating multiple resources, coordinating complex information, and ensuring your project is actually buildable. There's a lot of variables there when we say buildable. Here's something that most homeowners get wrong about timing. They think interior design happens at the end of the project. All right, so I skipped into something here, but this is part of the teamwork here. And I want to really drive on this point because interior designers, the good ones, can be really valuable for a project. And some homeowners think that, oh, we'll just worry about all that after the plans are done and we have permits and during construction. That's a big mistake, and that contributes to the hell that you could go through, that your neighbors might be going through. It could cost you a ton of money too if you don't get an interior designer involved now, maybe even before. Maybe even during schematic design, if it's a project type that's more complex, a lot of variables, you're going to want to think about that from an interior designer perspective. Some architects employ interior designers. Some architects have interior designers that they like to work with. You're going to start asking these questions back in schematic, but definitely now, okay? Why is it important to bring interior designers in? The architectural framework really isn't 100% set, so they can actually contribute to refinements. So here's an example. If they're laying out the kitchen and you have these specific requirements for wine fridges and sub-zeros, they may want to move the kitchen window 6 inches to get a balance between the kitchen design specifically, the cabinetry details, and getting things centered and symmetry. Architects don't necessarily go to that level of detail, not to say that they can't and they're not competent. Those kind of details get overlooked. Ceiling details, moldings and fireplaces, and all kinds of things could influence the actual final size or shape of a room or location of windows and door openings. as an example. Material and finish decisions could affect structural, electrical, and plumbing designs, believe it or not. If he or she of your interior designers is designing a nice big 10-foot island, and you decide you want some faux beams to tie in with the cabinetry detail and some pendant light fixtures. Oh no, let's do 3 pendant lights instead of 2. And these are the kind of things that can be included into the final electrical and lighting plan, as opposed to being out in the field during construction, trying to make those changes on the fly. Things got thought about 6 months ago, never made it to the plans. Now change orders come into play, delays come into play. You get the idea. This is an example of why material decisions, meaning cabinetry, counters, fixtures, all those ones beyond the sheetrock, can actually affect the architectural design. And if you have a good architect, they don't mind that as long as you bring this person in as part of the team, or they bring in the person as part of the team, so that the end best result is achieved. So that's what we're trying to do. And this also can avoid a lot of expensive changes down the road by bringing in an interior designer. And they also coordinate them with the other consultants, such as the electrical designer, the plumbing designer, or maybe they are the electrical designer. A lot of interior designers do electrical and lighting design. They're not electrical engineers. I'm talking about the placement and location of light fixtures and outlets that match your lifestyle. So somebody working on that on the side while the architect is working on the structure is a good way to collaborate. And then you bring them together and say, no, we want a plug here. We want to add another plug here. We want lighting around the perimeter here, but not in the middle. So those are the things that an interior designer really brings to the table, just as an example. So what your interior designer brings to early development, in summary, is the technical expertise in space planning and material coordination and interpreting your lifestyle to the home. For some reason, interior designers tend to do a better job, in my opinion, of some of those nuances. Johnny likes to play the guitar. Mary is a soccer player, whatever. The mom wants a big craft room, and the dad wants his man cave. I know that sounds pretty typical, stereotypical. This is the idea where they latch onto that, and they can help you with that technical expertise in space planning, material selection, lifestyle planning, and furnishings, where the furnishing is going to go relative to the lighting and the floor outlets. And so knowledge of lead times and affect construction scheduling. So a lot of interior designers and projects are intimate with the material suppliers, the material types, the locations, the resources. Lead times can really drive a construction schedule. If you can't get the countertop material on time, you can't finish the project. And if your countertop material is 6 weeks out or 8 weeks out, and you don't find that out until the countertop people measure, and you're planning to have the plumber come in a week later to connect the fixtures, and you can't get the material for 8 weeks, interior designers know some of this stuff, and they can work with your project manager or your contractor and understand that and convey that. And it's really your project manager that's going to ask those questions, better ask those questions, because they're doing the scheduling. That's a whole nother episode. Interior designers also can really help you with specifying the fixtures, plumbing fixtures, lighting fixtures, appliances. They have a lot more knowledge because they've been engaging with this on a regular basis and keeping up to date, the good ones. And they also are good at 3D visualization. An interior designer that is more technically competent. Now, I have another episode I talked about interior designers and the differences between decorators and interior designers. I can't get into it now. You can go back and listen to that, but a good interior designer is a technically competent designer that can use design software, develop 3D renderings and colored renderings for you, material boards and whatnot, so that you can visualize your materials on your project. So what your architect is doing behind the scenes, let's talk about that real quick. So the phase one, this has been three different phases, but The first thing they do is they're doing a design validation and property integration. So they're verifying the selected design actually works within your specific property. Now that's hopefully been visited before, but they're making some final determinations. They're checking existing structure compatibility for remodel projects. This is where the structural engineer may come into play. You may see them visit the site. If they don't visit the site, I'd ask them why. If you're doing a big remodel or renovation, a structural engineer usually should visit the site to understand how to design the bones of this new addition. And they're confirming those regulatory compliance possibilities before going too far. I talked about that in the schematic design phase. There's a lot of limitations out there already that you don't even know about, and sometimes design professionals don't know about, that they need to verify to make sure that the building's not too high, that you don't have too much square footage, things like that. So you can go back and listen to that episode. They're confirming all of this so that when they go to submit the plans of the building department, they don't get blown away by some stupid surprise that they should have learned earlier on. A lot of this is like almost just human nature for a design professional and architect. They're already doing all this, but you need to know it should be done, because you don't want to get that story of, oh, we're going to have to cut 2 feet off the back room because we're over square footage. That should not happen, but it happens a lot. So you need to know that so that you can pose those questions. Phase two, so phase one was design validation and property integration. Phase two is early team coordination and integration. So I talked about engaging with interior designers, structural engineers, all the consultants in the team that needs to go into play for the project. They're doing all this during the design development phase and maybe even earlier in the schematic design phase. So that is a big part of what they do. Phase three is the feasibility analysis and risk assessment. So they're going back to analyzing the constructability of the proposed design and usually working with an engineer on that. And they're identifying potential cost drivers early in the process. Now, there's different style of architects and designers that do this or don't do this. And you can go back and listen to my architect episode about the different types of architects. Some architects won't go through that step and they'll just go plow ahead, design it as you wanted, and then come to find out certain elements were just not realistic to build or just too expensive to build. So hopefully they're doing that. They're making sure that some of these grand ideas that we have can actually be done reasonably. And they're also assessing timeline implications of the design choices, how long things are going to be taking to build and get. And then they're also thinking about the approval process through your planning department and your building department. There's a couple steps that have to happen to get your building permits for your new custom home project. Planning department's the first one, building department's the second one. They're preparing for the next stage of design in all the plans and specification and all the compliance information. That is a quick rundown, not to mention all the design work and drawing the plans and building the plan sets. All that is just a given that they're doing, and these are some of the other things they're doing behind the scenes. So when your interior designer is involved from the beginning of design development, going back to that interior designer, I'm going to drive that again. Let's talk about some red flags to watch for. If your architect suggests waiting to bring in an interior designer, that makes me nervous. If they aren't proactively discussing team coordination, such as the consultants we spoke of, or if they seem to be working in isolation without planning for special integrations. There's nobody else hanging around helping out, right? What are they really thinking through where the on-demand water heater should go? Are they thinking that, or are they just not even putting it on the plan? That happens a lot. So design development really requires early team assembly and active collaboration. So keep an eye on that. Is the interior designer, where are we at on that? And some of those other elements. Let's talk about design checkpoints. And these are your strategic pause points and financial reality checks. So they're design checkpoints and budget checkpoints. So a design checkpoint is once you've selected your schematic plan, smart homeowners take what I call a design checkpoint. This isn't a delay or indecision. It's strategic validation. Think of it as your last chance to catch major issues before they become expensive problems and haunt you through the construction. So that's going to happen at the beginning of design development, when you've made your choices on the plans and the styles, but you're going to do that periodically as plans are getting presented to you. You're going to just keep an eye on the things that you care about, the look and the feel and the usability, the functionality for your lifestyle, the materials. You're going to be doing design checkpoints, okay? And then the budget checkpoint, we talked about budget checkpoint one, which is early on, and that was more kind of a higher level look. Now you're going to get into budget checkpoint number two, all right? And this is a part of this whole process that sometimes gets ignored and not thought about or don't want to think about it. And with the second budget checkpoint, at the end of design development, it's much more precise and powerful. So now you're going to have costs from a contractor that you're planning to use, or multiple contractors, that you can then make educated choices because you have 90% of the materials specified and the scope of work specified by your designers, and you're able to then hand them a set of plans and specifications, physical set of plans, to get accurate estimates. You know, what makes checkpoint number two different than number one? It's much more dependable than phase one, because phase one, budget checkpoint one, was gut feeling, square footage analysis, experience that a contractor or a home builder might bring into a project. Helpful, but not that dependable. So this one's a lot more dependable. And they're going off of real data rather than just hypothetical rough estimates. And they can provide detailed line item pricing for you by category. And each contractor does it different ways, which is an unfortunate process for a homeowner. But I've got a system I've got that I'm eventually going to present to you so that you can send out for estimates in a systematic way. So that is the budget checkpoint that is really helpful. So you're at the end of step two, stepping stone two, design development, before you move into step three, which is like putting it all in concrete. You are building what's called a construction document. So before you go there, you need to make sure that you have to decide how much you want to prioritize the budget, how comfortable you feel, and how much more due diligence should be done to make you feel comfortable before you spend more money on design, building construction documents, which is all about submitting to the city for your building department and getting final contracts prepared and so on. So the three validation areas, right, at these checkpoints we'll talk about. There's the technical feasibility check, right? Can the selected design actually be built as envisioned? Are there structural or system conflicts that need resolution? This is, you're depending on your architect and your engineer to do this, but this is what needs to happen. Do local regulations support the proposed design? Big one. You can really screw up as a designer by not really making sure that is happening. And have we identified potential construction challenges early? Questions like, has all this stuff been done before? Is there anything on your mind that you are a little concerned about as a designer, Mr. or Mrs. Architect? Is there anything in your gut that says we better look at this further? I'm going to tell you right now, as a designer and a contractor and handling thousands of projects, they almost always have that feeling somewhere in a project. This detail isn't quite thorough, so I'm just going to cover my ass, the contractor might say to himself, and exclude it or disclaim certain things about it. So that's a technical feasibility check as part of these checkpoints, right? We have the feasibility, technical checkpoints, and then we have the budget checkpoints. The financial reality check, that's number two. Do cost estimates align with your budget expectations? Are there obvious cost drivers that need addressing? Should any elements be reconsidered, phased, or optioned differently? That's your time now to do that before you actually commit to the project. And what are the real financial implications of your design choices? There's going to be choices that you might make that maybe you said, yeah, let's do that, but you don't really understand that tiling the whole ceiling is going to cost you $15,000 more when you were working with your interior designer. You have to think about some of the decisions that you've made. Were those linked to cost? Sometimes they're not. I love that walnut front door. Did you know it was four times more than the oak one? Things like that. So that is the kind of the checkpoints that I wanted to bring to you and that are really important at the design development stage. Some of the biggest mistakes that are made by a design team and then ultimately by a homeowner is skipping some of these pause points I'm talking about. The pause points between design steps, between schematic design and design development. The pause points at the checkpoints, the budget checkpoints, the design checkpoints. The energy sometimes gets so crazy on a project, people are just loving it and just going for it, and they are skipping over some of these important steps. Ultimately, it comes to the surface. And it's usually when you get your first bid in from a contractor and you're just blown away. This is the number one thing that a design and construction team needs to avoid. And we're going to talk about a design build solution versus the traditional method in an upcoming episode and how I've tried to eliminate that. So some of these pause points, ignoring the financial reality, okay? The pause points between design, they exist there for a reason, and that's for you to just take a breath and go, are we still on track? Not staying engaged. So the most successful projects happen when homeowners actively participate in the design. Now that sounds funny to say, but there are a lot of projects that I've had where the homeowner was very engaged, emailing me, sending me links to the products they want, feedback, asking for ideas. And then there's clientele that just wash their hands of it once they've signed the agreement and sent a check, and not evasive, but just not responsive enough to a designer. So what happens is people start making decisions on their own, and it's not you. And then you, a year later, when you walk into your brand new custom home, look up and go, what is this? You allocating enough time to stay engaged into the design, attending the meetings, providing feedback, this is really important. This is how you keep your designers focused. This is how you keep the morale up. This is how you get the best quality output of both your design team and your construction team. When you properly utilize these design checkpoints and budget checkpoints, you transform from a homeowner hoping everything works out into the general manager of your project, making informed decisions at critical junctures. You maintain control over your investment and your timeline. Now, each homeowner is going to have different ways they want to manage their project. In some cases, you can have your architect be your primary advocate, and you pay him to do that, and it's worth it, and they will have a different mindset, right, for the project, and even into the construction of the project. Architect firms offer construction administration services, which is separate from the design, and they will be your agent, your advocate. The other way you can do it is you can hire a specific owner agent. So let's say you're doing a large custom home and it's your second home and you're not there all the time. You can hire a construction agent, which is really an extension of you, but has all of the knowledge from design and construction inside them, and they are orchestrating the project and managing the project. You've got one central point. Now that's going to cost you more money, obviously, but for folks that can afford that or want to invest in that, it can be a good solution. So let's close this one out. Once again, I've gone on and on. Design development is the commitment phase, right? It's a big phase. It's a big transition. The creative exploration is over, meaning big changes, size of home, style of home, all of that. There are six objectives to create your roadmap in design development. Each one builds towards construction readiness, and I'll try to put that list in the show notes for you. And your architect becomes your conductor, orchestrating multiple specialists and complete coordination, and sometimes all the way through to the construction and the contractors. And then the design checkpoints are strategic pause points. So that's my message today with design development. That's the first episode of design development that we're going to be getting into. So the action items for you today are: think about confirming your genuine commitment to your selected schematic design. That's where you, that's how you want to feel. Review the six design development objectives with your architect. Ask about their process for team coordination and validation, and schedule your design checkpoint discussions before proceeding. That's what you care about, and that's what we really need to talk about. We're not trying to teach you how to be a designer or a contractor. Think about things from your perspective. Like, what do you really care about? So you're transitioning from a dreamer to a project manager, from exploring possibilities to actually executing a plan, from asking what if to saying this is how is a big shift, but it's a natural progression of every successful project. So next episode, we're diving deeper into the specialist coordination process, how structural engineers and MEP consultants integrate with your architect and interior designer. I think it's important for you to understand that because they will drive the design and drive the cost of the project, and how professional coordination actually works behind the scenes, and how your plans evolve from pretty pictures into detailed construction documents. Plus, we'll explore the specific deliverables each specialist provides and how they all work together. And that's all you have to really do is just absorb that, so that there's really no action. I just want you to absorb that and understand that there's stuff going on so that you might be able to ask the right questions. So my last message here is, remember, successful projects aren't accidents. The heavy emphasis on the planning up front, and the only way you're going to be able to do that is to gain some knowledge, is how you can get the best end result and actually maybe even build your project less expensive than it would otherwise end up being, because you've thought it out, you've planned it out. Thanks for listening. This is the first episode of 3 of Design Development. I'm Bill Reed, your home building coach from the Awakened Homeowner.
Thanks for tuning into the Awakened Homeowner. Remember, you've got the power to take control of your project from day one. If you're ready to dive deeper, grab the Awakened Homeowner book on Amazon. It's your roadmap to success. Join our community at theawakenedhomeowner.com and download our free story, The Tale of Two Homeowners. And here's something exciting. I'm developing an app called BuildQuest that's going to revolutionize how you plan and manage your project. Visit buildquest.co to become a founding member and test drive the app when it launches. Follow us on social media and hit that subscribe button. All the links are in the show notes and bio. Got questions? I'd love to hear from you. This is Bill Reed. You got this.